welcome. You're on air with Ella, where we share simple strategies and tips from people who are doing something better than we are. Whether it's wellness or relationships to just living better and with more energy, or changing your mindset to accomplish more in your own life and succeeding however you define it. This is where we share the best of what we're learning from the experts, and we're learning more every day. Live better, start now. Let's go. Hey, it's Ella. You know I love talking with you about how to change the habits we don't want and how to cultivate the ones that we do. Our tendency to repeat patterns, even when they don't serve us, is often rooted in our desire for the familiar and our resistance to uncertainty. So we cling to bad habits subconsciously because, ironically, they provide a sense of comfort and predictability. Even if they are bad for us, they are familiar to us. So whether it's saving more money or spending less or creating more connection and maybe less doom scrolling or less drinking and more nourishment, whatever it is, it's crucial to recognize our tendency toward what is familiar and cultivate a relationship with the unfamiliar, with uncertainty, so that we can change. Because that is what change requires, right? A small step into the unknown, a bit of uncertainty about how to navigate through that change, or really any new behavior we're trying to cultivate for ourselves. So today I'm talking with my guest, Nicole Whiting, about being willing to be uncomfortable, about recognizing that uncertainty is required for habit breaking and habit making. And this is really important because fearing and avoiding uncertainty, whether it's subconscious or not, it leads to unhealthy behaviors like withholding intimacy or closing yourself off from growth and pushing the best version of you away. Embracing uncertainty requires openness, vulnerability, and it provides opportunities for growth. So when we can let go of needing to control and that need for certainty, we open ourselves to new experiences, to new perspectives, and our own evolution, including being able to change the habits that may be bad, but are familiar. I'm going to go one step further here and posit that seeking constant certainty, which is by definition impossible, but seeking that constant certainty is anxiety provoking. It keeps us ruminating. It keeps us overanalyzing. It keeps us impotent and stuck where we are. So in my way of thinking, resilience is built through navigating uncertainty and surviving it, proving to yourself that you can step into the unknown. And I know that sounds dramatic, but think about any behavior you are trying to change requires something new from you. And when we can trust our ability to cope with whatever life brings, we become more confident within ourselves. We become more resilient. We become more likely to be able to create and maintain change. So enjoy this conversation with Nicole and consider how cultivating a relationship with uncertainty is a direct path toward greater self-trust and to making the changes that you want to make for yourself. Because that's what we're about, right? Creating a life that's more of what we want and less of what we don't. Hey, you're on air with Ella, and today I am joined by Nicole Whiting. Very excited to introduce you to Nicole. Actually, Nicole, I would like you to introduce yourself. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this conversation. So by profession, I am a coach. I really focus on working with women and developing and cultivating a confident relationship with uncertainty. And in my spare time, I am an endurance athlete. I'm an ultra runner.
You have such an interesting approach, and part of your work is guiding your clients in understanding the language of their bodies and their behaviors. Can you explain that to us, Pete? What does that mean in your world?
Yeah, I think that one thing that we often forget is that our first language was our body language. Before we ever had access to verbal language, is we had our bodies and we have a nervous system. And throughout life, over time, through experiences, we often disconnect ourselves from that language itself. We often disconnect ourselves from the uncomfortable feelings and the amazing feelings, and we really move to that cognitive space and that verbal processing. And I think one of the big keys between knowledge and action is actually our nervous system, right? When we can start working with and understanding what's going on in our system, we earn and gain a lot of agency in how we can show up. For rather than seeking relief, we can then start to respond with intention and specificity almost. Like, we get to choose how we show up in the world.
I know exactly what you mean. And this is something that we are constantly espousing on this show. And one of the ways that I look at it, and an experience that I've not only had, but witnessed in many, many, many others, Nicole, is that when we go on autopilot in any area of our life, to our detriment, I mean, some things are great to be on autopilot, right? Making our bed, brushing our teeth, great.
Yeah.
But for most of my life, I want to live with intention, as you said, and I want to be really intentional about where I'm on autopilot. With that said, everyone listening, myself included, has been through those phases where you are completely cut off from your body. I find the less attention we're paying to ourselves and the more we dissociate from our physical body, the more indicative that is of how stuck we are, or how asleep we are in our own lives, or how we're living on autopilot because we're living for the external pressures of the world and not having time to tune in. Is that resonating with you at all?
Yeah, I think one of the things that really happens that you're kind of saying, when we feel stuck, it's like, I want to do something else and I'm not doing it. I'm continuing to do the same thing. I'm continuing to show up in the same way. And I think one of those missing pieces is we don't have the awareness around what's going on in our system. And most of the time, when we want more agency, we're actually often in a place where our system's a little bit activated. It's the times when somebody asks us to do something and our system goes, I need to say yes. And we walk away and we're like, why did I say yes? I really wanted to say no. And I think one thing that we often forget is, like, when our system gets activated, the first thing that goes away is our boundaries, because boundaries in the moment don't feel like they keep us safe. And when we're activated, we're trying to stay safe. So often we do the thing that in that very moment, even if it's not from a place of wisdom, right? We don't have access to our wisdom when we're activated. We do the thing that keeps us safe. And when we continually do the thing that keeps us safe, it's often in a pattern that we actually want to break.
Help me understand this. We do the thing that is familiar, right? That is what keeps us safe in that moment, in that one snapshot in time. It's not what we want bigger picture, but often when we're under the gun, when we're under pressure, we do the familiar thing. I think a lot of people can relate to that. And you're saying that ultimately that is what keeps us stuck?
In those moments, when we are kind of under that pressure, we're activated, we don't always feel like we have access to choice. There may be 15 choices in front of us, and in the moment, we can only see one. And that one thing is the familiar thing. It's the thing that's going to give us instant relief. It's the thing that's going to give us safety, not because it actually brings us safety, but because we know how to function in that choice. That's why we make that decision. We make that choice. And 2 minutes later, we're like, why did I do that?
Yeah. Okay. That makes so much sense, especially when we think about the over, what I call the over under. So over drinking, overeating, overspending, over yesing, or under communicating, you know, not being as vulnerable in our intimate relationships as we want to be because we revert to what's familiar, and that's anger over vulnerability, like all of these things. Can you walk us through an example of how we can mitigate that? Because it's our natural tendency.
Absolutely. It's the thing that's going to come the most natural to us. And I think that often we try to approach it on the front end. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's always helpful, because we actually don't always have awareness in that moment because we're just trying to give ourselves relief. So one of the things that I really work with my clients is, when we go through that moment, we have that experience, we sit on the other side and we're like, that's not really what I wanted. It's in that moment that we have that awareness that I think it's most important to give ourselves choice then. And that's in that moment when you say, I'm going to go back and I'm going to change that. And that's not always possible, but a lot of the times it is, right? And that takes a huge amount of courage and a lot of bravery. But if you can go back and say, you know, I told you I said I could do that. And actually, after thinking about it, I'm not going to be able to do that. You gave yourself the choice again. And most of the time, we don't give ourselves permission to change our mind.
Ooh, that's important. Most of the time, we don't give ourselves permission to change our mind.
Yes. Can you give yourself permission to change your mind?
And I think that's a big part of being accountable. I think that when you're adulting, and a big part of adulting is owning your shit, right? And we are trying to be accountable. That gives us the freedom or the permission, or at least the catalyst for going back to people and saying, I said this, I had to think, I need to reconsider, and I need to change my answer to you. What if the deed's already done? What if you had four cocktails instead of the one you intended on having?
That's when you look back and say, what happened, right? And we can't always take things back. We can't go back and undrink the drinks that we drank. But what we can say is, I noticed that there were some conditions here, or this was the circumstance. How do I prevent that circumstance? How do I work and get a more supportive environment the next time? So it actually comes down to compassion. When we don't beat ourselves up, if we can get ourselves and stay out of a shame cycle, we are far more able to move through that and make a different choice the next time.
So once again, we are replacing shame with curiosity.
The great metabolizer.
Well, I, if shame worked as a strategy, we'd all know by now. Do you ever feel a bit like you're operating on autopilot? Meaning, rather than being awake to our wants and our needs and our intentions, we're repeating some of the same behaviors, the same patterns day after day. And this is fine until it's not, right? And I don't want to speak for you, but for me, I know that that is not the way to get the most out of this one life that I have. Like, future me wants to look back at my life and say, I did the absolute most with what I had. So for me, that's everything from my physical health and my overall well-being to having more joy and fulfillment in what I do, to better relationships and being satisfied in my career. When it comes to you and this podcast, I have a passion for tapping into that for you as well. That is literally why I do this. I'm not a guru. I'm not standing on high and selling you a way to live, laugh, love your way through life, right? I am someone who wants to go along for the ride with you. I don't want to live a single day on autopilot, and I don't want you to either. I want to dial up that voice we have inside of us that says there is so much more. And that's why I created this community, and that's why I want to meet with this community in person and more often. So I'm inviting you. If you want to do something new, but you have no idea where to start, or if you have parts of you that you want to wake up or tap into, or if you want to dial up an area of your life and you haven't quite figured it out, I'm creating opportunities for you, for us, to figure that out. If you want to know what I'm creating or where, then join my waitlist today to have first access for all of the details. Simply DM me one word, that word is waitlist, and you'll be the first to receive updates. So there's no obligation, it's just priority access. Reach out via email or DM using the links in the episode notes right here in your podcast app. That is one word, waitlist, one text to show up for yourself, to waking up a little bit more of your potential. I promise I will share more with you soon, but I want the right people to share it with first. And if that's you, join the waitlist now and secure first access for an experience of real change. And I promise, a hell of a lot of fun. Okay, let's get back to our conversation with Nicole. Nicole, one thing that you talk a lot about is reimagining our intention for movement. What do you mean by that?
I think probably most of the people listening to the call, movement per se, we grew up with as somewhat of a form of punishment. I think movement was the thing to outwork what we ate. And I think it was very indicative of often the times that we grew up in. And I think that movement is is just part of being human. And I think that we also live in a world and a culture and a society that doesn't honor it that way. We, you know, we sit at desks all day long and we don't necessarily move our bodies. I think if we can look at movement as an expansion of ourselves and as a creative outlet for ourselves and a way to express ourselves rather than something to control ourselves by, I can't even imagine how differently we would approach the lives that we live.
Yeah, if we could untie movement from changing our bodies or untie movement even from exercise. Nicole, I was just having this conversation. I don't know if it will air before this or after this, but I was just having this conversation about how we've done ourselves, at least in the Western world, such a huge disservice by equating movement and fitness. Like, we were designed to move. We were designed to move right. our bodies in a way that felt joyful and natural and what we were designed for. And we've muddied those waters, I think, by making that synonymous with like being in a gym. Those are two very different things.
Two very different things.
Our ancestors did not go to the gym.
No, and our ancestors too also didn't exercise as a form of control. Like, when we talk about fitness, I think this is actually a really interesting conversation. Fitness is our ability to be able to do something the way that we want to do it. And that is not how we approach fitness in our world, right? But like, fitness is actually, can you do what you want to do in the way that you want to do it when you want to do it? And if we approach fitness in that way, the fitness world would be revolutionized. But that's not how we approach that either.
Okay, but forgive me. You are telling me this as an ultra runner. You are telling me this as somebody who will literally run 50 miles. How can I align these two phenomena in my head right now?
Yes. So I hear you. And also, ultra running has become an expression of myself. I would say that there was a time in which ultra running was something that I did. And I would say that running in general is a part of who I am. Mm-hmm. It's a part of how I express myself. It's been a part of my healing. It's not just something that I do. And I actually don't run for finish lines. I run for the process of who I become in the process, the parts of me that I haven't yet met. Those always come up in my darkest moments out on the trail. And it's allowed me to be with myself very differently in an expansive way. And I would also say that it's actually positively influenced my relationship with my body and myself far more.
I relate to that so much because I was the person who exercised to hack her body and exercised, you know, to counter some sort of food intake. This is so long ago now and such a different person that I'm describing to you, but that was me in my 20s. And then I fell in love with a sport and I became an athlete instead of someone who was doing exercise. So what you just shared with me is that you are being a runner, not doing a run.
Right.
That difference is absolutely everything. And for those listening who are like, I'm not doing a triathlon or a 50-mile race, like it ain't happening, that's not the point. Yeah. The point is when you can connect with, what you just described, Nicole, sounds like something you connect with on a spiritual level. Is that hyperbolic?
It's absolutely true. Running for me is a way for me to be with myself, a way to honor myself and to get to know myself differently. It's very spiritual, especially in the woods.
How would you encourage somebody who hasn't found their thing, who is still in the movement as punishment? And by the way, I just did it myself, because what I really mean to say is exercise is punishment. Movement, again, is what we were designed to do. It's walking. It's gardening. It's moving things around your house. It is playing with your, it is being in your physical body. What we are really talking about is fitness and exercise. So I want to actually draw a firm line between those two things. And so I'll rephrase the question, Nicole. How do you encourage people who haven't found their joyful fitness yet? In fact, me just saying that makes them want to roll their eyes.
One of the things that I often ask my clients is like, what did you do as a kid? Over time and with time and experience, we kind of lose that playfulness. I think that we compartmentalize it because at some point we learned that playfulness wasn't cool or wasn't appropriate or wasn't, you know, the pathway to belonging or whatever that might be. And so I think one of the things to do is to ask yourself, what did I do as a kid? How did I move my body as a kid? And what would it feel like to do that now? And then to keep showing up, right? And keep doing things in a way that you're like, I want to get curious about this. I want to get curious about what it feels like to dance in my bedroom by myself. I don't need to go take salsa lessons, but what does it feel like to just dance? What does it just feel like to just to tap my toe listening to music? We can start in really small spaces and allow that curiosity to expand us. So much of our resistance to it is actually how uncomfortable it might feel for us, right? Do we get self-conscious? Does it feel uncomfortable to move our bodies in a certain way? Are we, you know, going to be in front of someone? So really like sitting with the discomfort of doing something that we haven't necessarily engaged with.
Yeah. And knowing that you don't have to be good at something to enjoy it. That's another myth that I would love to bust today. You do not have to be good at something to enjoy it. In fact, anything worth doing, in my opinion, is worth flubbing at and feeling a bit silly or ill-equipped or, you know, that's a stretch. That to me, that means you're on to something. If I didn't do things because I only did things I was good at, I would do literally nothing.
Yeah. I mean, like being a beginner again, that's an uncomfortable feeling in itself. Like it doesn't feel good to not be good at something. I went on a surf trip. This was a couple years ago and remember thinking, I was like, oh, I'm an athlete. I'll be able to surf. And it was hard. And I was like, wow, this really sucks being a beginner. Like you think you're like, oh, I'll be able to do this. And like wave after wave, you're going down and it's humbling, right? And can we be with that? Can we be with that feeling and those sensations and continue to show up and say, there's something for here for me. I'm going to try it again.
Yeah. I love the adage or the question. When was the last time you're willing to be bad at something new? That is something that I actively engage with because I know when I'm getting soft, I know when I haven't done something that's gotten me out of my comfort zone. For me, that's an indicator. That is something that I actually pay attention to in my life. Tell me how that has manifested itself in your life.
I feel like that's a big question. Because I've been an athlete and an endurance athlete, I feel like every time I sign up for a race, every time I decide I'm going to do this one thing, I always tell myself every training cycle teaches me something I didn't know about myself. I like at this point, I'm eagerly waiting for what the lesson might be, what the knowing might be, and how I might shift and change. So racing has done that. Starting businesses has done that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, you know, movement related. It doesn't have to be a race. It can be going out and seeking new friendships. Like I'm going to move in and be willing to be uncomfortable and try to make new friends, right? It can be any one of these type of things that, you know, really that uncertainty piece is there. I think uncertainty has a lot to do with initiation.
Yeah, I think our relationship with uncertainty, there's a direct correlation with how fulfilled we feel and or how much of our potential we're tapping into. Are we hardwired, Nicole, to have a preference for certainty over uncertainty? Certainly, I know our childhood experiences would come into play. But as someone who does not have a very high need for certainty, am I biased because of that? Or is a relationship with uncertainty available to all of us?
A confident relationship with uncertainty is available to all of us because it has to do with our relationship with ourselves. And I think that's what we're really talking about when we talk about, you know, uncertainty and feeling confident in that is that do I trust myself no matter what the outcome is that I'm going to be okay? Mm-hmm. And that is something that we have tried to manipulate over time in our lives. I think if you look at children, their lives are very uncertain. Like, think about like, you know, like, oh, you're going here, you're going here. Like most of the time they have no idea what's coming next and they're functioning pretty well, right? And as we get older, we start looking for those places of certainty. And going back to what we very first talked about, like so much of it is about like, we don't have to feel uncomfortable, right? We can move towards those body sensations that feel more familiar, right? That's what certainty is like, oh, I know what's going to happen. I know how to manage this. I know what to do in this situation. And I think when we flip that, there's a lot of undoing for ourselves at like at our age to building that confident relationship. And it's putting yourself in that situation of like, I don't know what's going to happen next, but I'm going to honor me. And I'm going to have my own back and trust myself that no matter what comes, I'm going to be okay. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but I'm going to be okay.
Nicole, if we submit that it is healthy to and promotes growth to develop a more comfortable relationship with uncertainty, which at the end of the day is a fear of failing, I think, or falling short in some way. If we're trying to build our relationship with uncertainty, what are the smallest steps that we can take? I'm a big fan of small steps.
I think if you're really wanting to step in and start building a more comfortable relationship with uncertainty is to find the places in your life that have the least amount of consequence for yourself, because those are going to take the smallest amount of courage, the least amount of bravery to step into. So when we want to be confident in a conversation, we may not start with a conversation with our spouse that's been a hot topic for 20 years. We might want to have a very small conversation where we might disappoint someone or tell our truth where there's not a whole lot of consequence. So if we can find the places that we actually feel like we can support ourselves no matter what happens, that's the place that we want to start. We don't want to go to the big places that just feel really risky. Like we're not sure if we're going to be able to support ourselves or manage the outcome of that conversation, of that truth telling.
Okay, give me an example, like the simplest thing we can do.
The simplest thing that we can do is, this is a really silly thing that I often do with a lot of my clients because it comes up, is that if you're going out to dinner with a friend, you can simply say like, hey, I would like to go and have Mexican tonight, rather than saying like, hey, what do you want to eat, and try to be accommodating and trying to, you know, make sure that everybody feels good, like really just owning what you want in that very small way, and then allowing them to have whatever reaction they have. In those tiny little moments, you usually find out that like, it actually wasn't a big deal to just own what I wanted. And the outcome wasn't actually as catastrophic as I maybe thought it was going to be. She still wants to go out to eat with me. And so it's in those tiny moments where we're like, oh, maybe I could disappoint this person. Maybe they were really hoping for Thai food, but you know, they were okay with this. So it's finding the tiny, tiny moments with very little consequence that we can start working with. And then we can build that support system for ourselves over time to some of the bigger ones.
I like the concept of practicing asking for help, or practicing stating what you want or what you prefer, rather than trying to be so flipping accommodating all the time.
All the time. Yeah. And what we're really working on is building a greater tolerance to feeling uncomfortable. Foundationally, our ability to have a confident relationship with uncertainty is our ability to tolerate some pretty uncomfortable sensations that are in our system. Because if we can do that and we can move through that and allow them to come up and dissipate, we get to the other side. When we are in these moments and we're trying to manipulate or control, what we're really trying to do is to overcome all of our thoughts, not reality, just our thoughts. So then if we can allow those things to come up and then dissipate, we actually then know what we should actually potentially fear, what the actual consequence could be, rather than just what we think it might be.
Practice being uncomfortable.
Yes.
Honestly, I love that mentally and physically and emotionally.
All of it.
You would know.
Yeah, all of it. I mean, we avoid it. We avoid it. And I think that if we just keep being intentional and say, I'm going to be okay, this is just a sensation, this is just a feeling, I can make it to the other side, we will be able to do and be anything that we want to be.
Nicole, tell us where we can find you.
You can find me on Instagram at Nicole Whiting Coaching.
Nicole, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed today's show and got something out of it that you can use. If you did and you want to learn more, just head over to onairella.com, where I put up links to all of the stuff that you did not need to write down today because I got you covered. There's no with. It's just onairella.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing the show. And thanks for inspiring me. You are quite simply awesome.